Whose idea was it to come to Alaska, Susie, yours or Rich's?
First off, it was Rich. He wanted to see what the capital of Russian America was all about. We were here as tourists. But it was very much a joint decision when the opportunity came to leave the station in Minnesota, and we were going to either go to Alaska or Washington, D.C. And it was a discussion, but neither of us really wanted to go to Washington.
Yeah, I was offered a job at one of the national organizations, which I turned down to go to K2 instead.
Okay. And what was the lure of K2?
Alaska. It was close to Sitka.
Yeah, we were here for a 24-hour stopover in June of 73 and came back the following April because we had this baby now. And we have to be grown-ups. You can't fall in love with a place in 24 hours. So we came back and spent a week here and didn't see the sun once, but got to know people. And yeah.
Yeah. Spend time talking to
people. Sometimes love at first sight works.
Yeah.
And did Sitka recruit you to help get their radio station going, or did you guys come over here to try and whip up enthusiasm for the model that had already sort of taken root in Juneau?
Oh, Marika and Steph already had the model in mind. They advertised for a manager, and I applied. Now, I had also lobbied for it. I worked with Dick Eliason when I was manager of K2 to lobby to get Raven Radio's money with the idea that if we got the money, I would apply. But, they had already gotten the community was already here set up for the radio station when we came over.
And was there money in the legislature for this?
I mean,
were people trying to figure out ways to spend money at the time?
Yeah, that was the oil wahoo boom. But no, the state was very committed to public radio. Especially because of what it did in the Bush. And they figured, okay, we need to do it the rest of the state as well. And really, as the more money came in, the less support there was for public radio. It was very interesting. The last two full-service stations built were Sitka and McGrath, and we went on the air in 82. Most of the building happened between 75 and 82. And then after that, they cut things down and just built repeater stations. After they built the 16 full-service stations, which is really odd.
And was it just I don't think the money was tapering off by 82.
No,
the money
no.
was just.
Now, part of it was the argument that some had that the job was done, because by that point, most of populated Alaska had service of some sort, and so we're talking about a second service or a local service. And there are some that don't understand the need for local versus service. You can get the word out there that the weather is going to turn really lousy and you need to do something, or the emergency notification project can be done with one cover the whole state station. Mm-hmm. If it's really an emergency, you'll break into whatever is going on and say, hey, this is an emergency in whatever community. And
I think what happened was Anchorage got too big, frankly.
Yes.
I think what happened was they were building these stations, and the last one funded was McGrath. And McGrath was a full-power, high-power AM radio station, and it cost a lot of money to build. It was really expensive to get stuff up to McGrath, and it had a very small population. And I remember a couple of legislators from Anchorage saying, no more McGraths. We're not going to do this anymore. It's too much money for too few people. We've got needs in urban Alaska that we have to meet. So the next two that were built were Galena and Fort Yukon, and they were built with just transmitters with a staff of one, small, closet for studio, and they were to repeat. Galena repeated McGrath, and Fort Yukon was to repeat Fairbanks. And then Talkeetna was a repeater. Made people in Talkeetna were not happy about that. Unalaska was
still
a repeater.
Aren't.
And Unalaska really, if you've got a full-service station in Haines, you ought to have a full-service station in Unalaska or Talkeetna. But they were made repeaters as well. And, Chupik.
But the argument is that if you're going to be carrying National Public Radio, it doesn't matter whether it's your local station or it's a repeat of the Anchorage station. You're still
so say the legislators from Anchorage.
Was it a political football at the time? Was it politically controversial?
No, not really.
Was it strictly this sort of utilitarian argument? It's too much money to serve too few people?
I think at that point, yeah. At that point, it was plus the urban-rural thing. It was utilitarian plus urban-rural. I mean, there were certainly strong advocates. Dick Elias and Ben Grusendorf were Frank Ferguson, who was chairman of the – and then Al Adams, who was chairman of the finance committees, certainly were supporters of rural community and public radio. But the population just shifted. You know, with the redistricting in 1980 – more of the legislators shifted to Anchorage and Fairbanks.
Let's talk a minute about getting the cable house. When you guys moved to Sitco, was there any cable house? Was there any radio station here yet? Or were you still trying to find a place?
Well, Marika and Steph had arranged for the cable house, but we had second thoughts because of the size of the upstairs and because of handicapped access. And so we looked at two other sites. One, Mount Edgecombe School offered us the tower, the control tower at the old...
would not improve the handicapped access.
No, but more to the point, the transmitter was there, and it would have really meant a lot of grounding. We could have had a lot of interference because our transmitter was there. And the other place we looked at was the Sitka Christian Center, which was for sale, which is on Hurston Monastery, the church that where our brook runs under it. But as soon as we bounced up and down on the floor, we realized that the whole building shook. And so... we decided to make our best deal, I'm glad we did, with the cable house and put it here. But the main problem with the cable house was handicapped accessibility. And, you know, the ADA...
And you have carried a wheelchair up more than once.
Yep. ADA had not passed yet, but we were thinking about it.
Yeah, it's a problem that wasn't solved for 25 years.
Exactly, yeah.
So, Raven Radio... What did it take to kind of pull it together operationally? And was it sort of a leap of faith?
Sitka always strongly supported the idea, probably more than other communities. And, you know, Marika, Steph, Tom, Dan, Kermit had done such a good job of organizing the musicians in the community and others in the community that there is a group of people who wanted to have a radio station and were ready to volunteer and things like that. And we made a conscious decision not to buy a turnkey package. We had enough money to buy a turnkey package, but we didn't. We built it ourselves with volunteer labor. Kermit got a lot of his friends, carpenters. Steph did a lot of the cabinet work. And it took us longer than it should have, according to the APBC and according to the legislature. But in the end, we came in $40,000 under budget, which was the money that we used to seed the translator network. So it worked out very well. We only needed an extra $16,000 to complete the translator network from the legislature, whereas we would have had to have had about, you know, $60,000-$70,000. So
and we had a lot of equipment that was used for remotes that was not part of the
normal
imagined turnkey package because there was a lot of events that happened even before we went on the air in potlucks and
concerts
and barn dances and a number of different varieties of offerings.
So
and people took advantage of it.
We had a portable Yamaha mixing board that we use for concerts. We use for both public. We had a good PA system, which was not part of the original package. But with the money we saved, we bought the Yamaha portable board, the PA system, a lot of extra microphones, cables, and we were able to do a lot of stuff. We did live broadcast every Friday night from a coffee house on Catalina Street called the Evening Bite, live music. We bought not only the RPU to do the remote pickup unit to do the assembly, but several handheld remote pickup units so we could do live news. I remember once an Alaska Airlines plane was coming in, and they weren't sure the landing gear had locked. And so I did a live broadcast from the tower at the airport with a handheld radio that was on a licensed RPU frequency. We did that. I remember when the mayor did his State of the City address, we took one of these handheld RPUs, did an interview with the mayor right after the State of the City address live. So we had that live capability that we wouldn't have had we bought the turnkey package.
And when you say turnkey, you're talking about somebody would have sent several pallets of equipment over, you would have uncrated it and set it on a table. And
they would have done it.
There are several companies that do this.
Well, there's
one good one now. You want to have a radio station, and in their humble opinion, you need this board, these number of mics, these number of this, that, and the other things. And you say, yes, I want a radio station. and they bring all of this stuff in, and in some cases they will connect it for you.
In Alaska, it was not only connected, but you show them the floor plan, and they would build the studios. They would actually design the studios. They would build the studios. They put up the wall partitions. They would do everything. It was a turnkey package, and it was a guy named Stan Bennett, whose brother Larry Bennett owned LAB Aviation in Haines, and so he had Alaska connections. And Stan Bennett built most of the radio stations here, and he did a good job on them. I mean, nothing wrong with the work that Stan did. It's just that we did it ourselves.
Yeah, Raven Radio has always had this kind of distinctive
yeah.
sort of, I don't know, a more kind of handcrafted, hand-tooled sort of look to it.
That was the idea.
A lot of it was very handcrafted, and you had a lot of bargaining on the part of Tom McGrane, who was the chief engineer at that point. He didn't want state-of-the-art. He wanted state-of-the-value, which was a very important distinction, that some of it was not state-of-the-art. If it isn't going to live up to the rigors of Alaska, we don't want it.